probably a very crucial subject for all of us. We all know about the illusion. We all accept that there is an illusion. We even intellectually concede that there is illusion. And then we go right out and live in and as that illusion, and accept the illusion around us just as if we had never heard about it. The reason we do that is because the acceptance of it rarely penetrates beyond the level of the human mind. We are very willing to perceive a difference between the universe of God and the universe of the sense mind, but it requires a certain change in activity to proceed on the knowledge that we have, and this change is a painful process. And because it is a painful process, and we are rather reluctant to do it, we never can really confirm that which we think we know, and our knowledge never deepens to conviction. And so that lacking the conviction, we always remain in the realm of intellectual knowing, never fully being able to walk in the reality. But even that must pass, because we find the illusion becomes quite painful too. It becomes so painful, in fact, that ultimately we realize that the moment of birth is the beginning of death, and that death continues as we think we're living. We begin to see that we're looking at a world rather backwards and upside down. We're seeing time and space out of focus. We're seeing a teaspoon full of eternity and calling it life. We finally tire of that. Something begins to stiffen the backbone, and we make a decision. Perhaps we don't make the decision, it's made for us. But that decision is made that I am going to penetrate the illusion. I'm going to put an end to the guesswork, to the in-between life which is neither fish nor fowl. I'm going to make the step. And so we analyze ourselves, sort of testing our weapons to see if we can make that step. We try to firm up what we know.
Yes, I know there is a man-made world. I don't know it too well, but I know about it. I know that there's a five-sense world. And I know there's another world called consciousness in which everything is perfect. So I have two worlds. I seem to be in one, but I'm in the other. What can I do? It's important to trace that illusion, because it begins in a very funny way. Through the five senses, we form an idea of a world. We even form an idea of God. And this idea of God is only our concept. And so we say God. And to one it means this, and to another it means that. It never really means the same thing even to us as time goes by. Our concept of God changes. And depending on your background, God to you is, well, if you were Judaic, you would look at God, you would think perhaps of a figure the size of one of these great monoliths of Michelangelo, all muscled, with a great big staff in one arm and a long flowing white beard, and a great ruggedness and determination with wisdom. And this concept is a graven image in the mind. If you were of another faith, you might think of God as, well, at least represented by Jesus Christ. And then to you, God represents whatever Jesus Christ does or says. And if your background is metaphysical, you say God is mind, principle, law. And yet we're all using the same word, God. There's still another group to which God is anathema. The mere mention of God to this group is enough to send them into hysterical rage, because they have seen the inactivity of that God rather than the activity of him. They have seen God used rather loosely by their elders. They resent the word, because to them it means a lot. So when we say God, we have no uniform idea. Perhaps we have a uniform idea within each of us, so that if you say God or I say God, we know what we mean. But even this changes. And so God today is not the same to me as God 10 years ago. And that should be the clue that I do not know God at all, because God isn't changing. And that concept which I entertain of God, which continues to change, can never be God. It is an idea, a concept that I maintain. And we find that man has created God, because all he has of God is his own concept of God. And now this idea in the mind, this mythical God, this man-made concept of God, different in all of us and changing in all of us, this was the God we used to pray to. A mythical God, a man-made concept, a graven image. And we prayed. And when we prayed to that hole in the sky. And we prayed with the mind of this world. And the strange thing about that prayer is it never left that mind. Our prayers never got outside of our own minds. And we couldn't answer our own prayer, so it remained unanswered. The God we prayed to was but a graven image that couldn't answer anything. And so we found that prayer was futile. No matter how often we tried, or how difficultly, or how importantly we thought our prayer was going to be to God, somehow nothing happened. Except when, on rare intervals, we escaped beyond our own mind in moments of true despair. And then something did happen, because we got beyond the realm of our concept of God by accident. And so from this mythical God we created, to our mythical prayers, to our mythical lives. In the first book of Genesis, we were given the truth. We were told about the spiritual creation, the immaculate creation, the perfect, flawless creation, where there are no opposites, where there is no evil, where there is no sin, where there is no lack, no limitation, no disease. You never find death mentioned there either. And then came recreation, or miscreation. The second book of Genesis tells us about that. How God, which no longer is God, but is now man's concept, the concept of him who was created out of the dust. And in this miscreation, we find a God who, because he is not God, is capable of the same mistakes that human beings make. The And so he tries to create. Or rather, he miscreates. And there we have our first miscreation, a man out of the dust, who must return to the dust. And then out of his rib, a woman. And finally, man and woman brought together to create children. As Joel put it, on the third attempt, God finally made it. First the dust, and then the woman out of the rib, and then finally, union. Why not write at once? Because this was not God. Because this was the mystic teaching us by writing this story of the second book of Genesis about the realm of the mind. That mind which recreates creation. And so we come up now to the mortal self, born of woman. And having entered into this world in the belief that we were born of woman, we now accept the various evils of our own mental creation, little suspecting that the world we live in is not God's creation. And it takes many jolts before even those of us on this path are willing to concede that God didn't make material things. I recall at the beginning of my ministry, when a science woman came to me who had been very successful in rewriting papers for scientists who didn't quite have the knack. They all put their names on them when they were finished, but she did the writing after she received the scientific facts from them. Her husband was an invalid. She wasn't so much seeking relief for him as trying to learn something about the infinite way. When we came to the place where matter is a mental concept, something in her rebelled. This was the hardest thing she had ever heard that she had to take, and she couldn't. She couldn't possibly take the fact that the tree out there, that the flower out there, that the earth she liked to walk upon was a mental image. She couldn't accept that, even though in her own home, the hands of her husband were unable to move. They were unable to work. And yet she thought that God had created these physical hands. It's very difficult when you're conditioned and when you wish to cling to the beauties of this world to learn that even those beautiful things are but a promise of something even greater in beauty than the textures and shapes that we perceive and behold and touch. And so I do know, from those whom I have talked to, that dropping the physical sense of life and the belief in its reality is next to impossible at this time. But when you graduate from that inability to face the fact that God could not create that which can ever be imperfect, then you must look at the illusion and try to understand what is really meant by the word illusion. Now, just to say that out there is an illusion can be very misleading. Just to say this world is an illusion can be very misleading. But the word illusion is meant to convey something that perhaps no word fully conveys. It may be a defect or an inability of terminology to adequately describe a meaning. But illusion, in the mystical sense, is very startling. It means that what you see out there is not out there. That the illusion has never gone beyond the mind. It means that there is no external form out there. There is the delineation of form only in the mind. Illusion never goes beyond the mind in which it is perceived. For instance, you say the mirage is on the desert, but it is not on the desert. The mirage is in the mind perceiving it. A mirage is nothing. It cannot be there. We cannot say nothing is on the desert. It is an appearance, but where is it? It is an appearance in the mind. The illusions we speak of are forms, objects, material substances, but they are truly not externalized. They are graven images in the mind. When you perceive that the nature of illusion is within your mind and not external to you, then it is easier to understand. But that is still only the beginning of an explanation of the word illusion. Because there is a hidden fact which has prevented us all from truly understanding. And that hidden fact was something that had occurred to me, and I mentioned to someone, I'm going to find it in Joel's book somewhere. Well, I found it. That hidden fact is the universal mind. And when we say illusion, we are not referring to an illusion in your individual mind. We are referring to an illusion in the universal mind, which your individual mind confirms. You see it in the universal mind, you confirm it in your mind. And for this reason, it seems to be external to you. Now let us clearly delineate the meaning there. Each of us looks out and sees a cripple, which God did not create. Each of us looks out and sees a whirlwind, which God did not create. Each of us looks out and sees a sick child, which God did not create. Now, how many illusions are there? You're looking with your mind. I'm looking with my mind. He and she and they are looking with their mind. But the real illusion is the mind, not the objects. There's only one human mind. That's the illusion, that we think there are more than one mind. And so we're all looking out of one mind. And in that one universal mind, we are seeing something, but it never gets outside of that universal mind. It is always in that universal mind, and that's where we see it. And because the universal human mind is our mind, we see it as if it were external to our form. Now, another thing we don't want to accept is this form being illusion. That really gripes us. But Buddha saw the truth of that. His work was misinterpreted, but he saw the truth. He saw that there is one consciousness, one ego, one self, one life, one mind. And because of this one, all was perfect. But then, our misperception of that one becomes the second world. The world of illusion, the world that he called Maya, and his perception of this made his message spread like wildfire throughout India. But always, lesser consciousnesses than the master lose the message. And so Maya, or illusion, or this second world, became the illusion out here, which we all had to accept. And so they lived a passive life of acceptance. Now, illusion means not there. And when Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world," eventually it became known that we had two worlds, my kingdom and this world. But now in the light of what illusion means, you can say, there are not two worlds. There is only reality, which is the world or the kingdom, the immaculate creation, and that's all there is. The divine universe is all that exists. There is no second world. Illusion is not a world. There is an illusion about divine creation, and that is in the universal mind. And that appears to us as this world, but this is what you must recognize. In that illusion of this world is a form that wears your name. We are all illusions in that world, which is a misperception of the divine kingdom. Can you not see that this is the plan that teaches us? This is the plan that builds in us the realization of our own true divine center. Now, when you have a problem in your studies when you were back in high school, you never accused the teacher or the school system of giving you a problem. You were grateful for it. You had to solve it. And as you continued solving these problems, you continued developing a talent or facility which enabled you to solve higher ones. It was through the solving of the problems that you learned and developed a higher talent. And do you see that this is how we are being developed into Christ consciousness? We must face the problems of the illusion, slowly overcoming them. How? The only way you're going to overcome them is by developing your spiritual perception. And in the overcoming of the illusory problems of this world, your spiritual vision will deepen until Christhood is realized. And so we begin to change our idea. We don't call these illusions anymore. We know the nature of them is that they are test cases. They are a sublime plan. Each of them deepens our awareness of self. Now, Jesus did overcome this world. He overcame the world of five senses. Quite clearly, this is the path we're going to follow. We're going to overcome the world of five senses. And our work is going to be made simpler when we recognize that the world of five senses never gets outside of the five senses. That the evils of the world never get outside of the five senses. Never can an evil externalize itself in reality. Because reality is the spiritual universe of God. And you have a guarantee that evil cannot externalize itself. Because you know God, Spirit, reality, life, to be omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. And those three omnis are your guarantee that evil is impossible in reality. For example, omnipresence tells you that God is everywhere. That no matter where you are, the place whereon you stand is holy ground. And this is true of everyone in the universe. Omnipotence tells you that the power of God is present where that omnipresence is. Omniscience tells you that the mind of God is present where God is present. There you have the power, the presence, the mind. What evil can exist in that? And so all evil that you perceive must be illusion. But you must go another step. God yesterday and today are the same. God today and tomorrow are the same. That which you saw changing, whether it be good or evil, must be illusion, because God is not changing. Only our changing concepts are the change that occurs. And these changing concepts are that which externalizes in thought alone, and which we have declared to be external evils. Now you can look at your earthquakes. You can look at all destruction that you see and know that these are but within the human mind. And so when we have prayed in the past, we have tried to get a mythical God to enter a mythical universe and change a bad illusion to a good illusion. When you analyze it, we have really spent most of our time in this world trying to change something into something else, or trying to preserve something we wanted from being changed into something else. Always it has been in the opposites. We have lived in the opposites of good and evil, happiness or sorrow, up or down, high or low, wealth or poverty, always trying to change that which was negative into something positive. But where are these opposites? Where is the evil that we're trying to change into good? With God, the one creator. So you begin crucifying these mental images that are graven in the mind. They really must be crucified. You've got to take a whip to them and get rid of them. These are the money changers. Each belief that is not true, each concept, is that which you must sell. Do you remember that young man who came to Jesus? He wanted to know how he could find eternal life. And Jesus said, sell all that thou hast. He was very dismayed. That isn't what he had hoped to hear, because that was the last thing he wanted to do. He didn't want to get rid of his worldly wealth. But he misunderstood. Sell all that thou hast. You cannot have any concepts in a human mind and still tabernacle with God. You cannot have the belief in the evil or in the good and experience the reality, because in the spiritual universe there is no evil, there is no good, there is no life, there is no death, there is no health, there is no absence of health. You're in a totally different dimension where there are no opposites. There is only spiritual being. And that spiritual being is always functioning in a state of perfection. We look around us and we say, where is God now? What is God doing right now? The answer is clear. God is being God. That means perfection is functioning everywhere. What are we seeing? When we're not seeing perfection functioning everywhere, pictures in the mind. These pictures in the mind are the pretense of power other than God power. And any acceptance of power other than God power is the acceptance of a power that exists only in that mind. Now, when you think of your own life, in the attempt to improve it, you have declared that it is not now perfect. In the attempt to acquire, you have said that you do not now possess all that the Father hath. In the attempt in any way to change your life, you have been guilty of accepting that which you have considered to be your life, whereas your life is the substance of God. And so you see, facing facts is probably the most difficult thing we have to do. And this facing facts, as we put it off, is because we know that the moment we face a fact, we are being asked to make a choice. Suppose this instant we had to make a choice. And the choice were to live in reality or to live in illusion. And suppose the choice were put on the basis of are you able to see in your closest friend or your husband or your wife, the person closest to you, are you able to see in that individual the substance of God? Now, if you took that as a test, if you could answer, yes, I can, you just might be telling the truth. The chances that you are telling the truth are very remote. Because in order to see the substance of God in that individual who is closest to you, you would have to first see the substance of God in yourself. Only the Christ can see the Christ. Only the Christ can bear witness to the Christ. And because this is true, even those of us who are deeply sincere will discover that in our efforts to touch reality in another, we are stymied by our inability to touch reality within ourselves. And so we have these superficial relationships. We have divorces all over the place because we are unable to know the other person. All we can know is the illusion. And we marry it. We receive a ring from the illusion and we give a ring to the illusion. And we say, now we are married until life or death do us part. But we don't know what we're saying. Because we never have a moment in which we recognize who that individual is. And because the law of God does not operate in the illusion, changes occur in the illusion. And these changing concepts show us that what we adored 1 week, 1 year, why, we just don't have that same feeling another year after that. Because we were loving an illusion. And it was the illusion of us that was doing the loving too. So there's a rift, a widening, a changing. But all the while, had spiritual substance been recognized, we would have entered into a relationship that had meaning. A relationship based upon not the changing attitudes of mind, but the permanent reality which we had discerned. And so it is in marriage, in friendship, in all human relationships, when we are able to arrive at the point of spiritual recognition, you will discover that the relationship is going to be eternal. Eternal during this span, eternal forever. Because where there is a spiritual recognition, you have reached that place where change can never enter. That is why it is said, that which God has brought together can never be rendered asunder. Where there is spiritual reality, the changing illusion never enters. And so it is in all that we do, think, feel. In the entire world that we move in, we develop the ability to delve to the core, beneath the shadows of thought, to touch something that is going to be there every tomorrow. And when we do, we have touched the inner Christ. We have touched that which existed before the world of illusion, that which will remain after the world of illusion, and that which is under the law of God. Now we can all do that. We can all touch the real. We can all live in the real as we learn to master ourselves, as we learn to master the illusion, to overcome the world of illusion. Removes us from the law of matter, from the false laws of heredity, from the false laws of change, from the false laws of environment. And we find only one law remaining, the law of eternal perfection in Christ. Now you know that we all try to use our minds. We try to use our minds to in some way lift us above this illusion that we learn about. And the more we try to use the mind, the more it, being the universal mind itself, entraps us. And there comes that great and glorious moment when you realize, I am trying to use an illusion to escape an illusion. When you surrender not your concepts, not your beliefs, not your memories, not your ideas, but when you surrender the fabric itself of the illusion, that mind, then the manufacturing plant, which has been spinning the illusion, is completely gone, and you find you're in the divine self. Now let's say the word God, quietly to ourselves, just God. And see that this is the God the world has prayed to. This is the God to whom we have sought surcease from sorrow. This is the God we have, in our own quiet way, tried to persuade to bless us. And this God never, never existed outside of your thought. Let's see that this is a God who has not removed evil from the face of the earth. Never has this God touched, removed, or in any way helped the human world to eliminate evil. Surely that should be a sign to us that we have not been worshiping God. The evil that this God has not removed has not been removed for two reasons. The hospitalized are there. The sick and suffering are there. And this God has not removed that for one reason alone. This God has no power. This God couldn't heal a flea. This God has no reality. Your mental thought will never be God. Remember, if you can say God, that doesn't create God. You can say the word sunshine. Will that warm anybody? Will that make the sun do something? It's just your concept about sunshine that you're saying. And when you say God, you're just saying your concept. And that won't heal anybody. And so we learn that our thoughts are only our thoughts. They are our thoughts about something. But we can only think finitely. Your hands can't hold up 5 billion pounds. Why should your finite mind be able to embrace infinite God? And so we give up trying to know God with a finite mind, or to think about God with a finite mind. And we see that all of the opposites, all of the illusions, came into our experience because, with the improper equipment of a finite mind, we hoped, without knowing why, to receive from an infinite God the truth, the reality, the substance, the power. And it couldn't be done. If it were given to such a finite mind, it could not hold it. So we change our equipment. We get rid of the finite mind. We overcome it. We are transformed by the renewing of it, or the rebirth of it. And now we are letting the divine mind reveal itself, not through our finite mind. We are crucifying the images of that finite mind, and we are regarding that finite mind itself as the tomb from which we are going to rise. Once we have accepted that all illusion is not out there, that all physical selfhood is not out there, that all material selfhood is not out there, that this world is a mental illusion in a universal mind of which we are all one part. When we have accepted that, then we come forth to be separate from it. And we rely solely on reality itself to use us instead of trying to use it. The finite no longer tries to use the infinite, but we surrender to the infinite. We surrender to omnipresence. We surrender to omnipotence. We surrender to omniscience. And we look at every form of lack, limitation, sin, evil, every negative, every form of error, as an illusion in the mind that can never be externalized, and therefore we do not try to improve it in the outer world, because it isn't there. We cannot improve out there what is not there. We cannot improve that sick man out there. We cannot improve or resurrect that dying man out there. We cannot treat that earthquake out there, or that inclement weather out there. We cannot get rid of lack or limitation out there. There is nothing out there except God. All of these are in a mind which is non-existent, and it is in that mind that you will find they must be removed. Now, when you touch God, and the grace of God flows through you, and the earthquake does no damage, and health takes the place of bad health, or abundance takes the place of lack, or happiness takes the place of sorrow, do not make the next mistake of thinking that now you have reality. You have not. You have merely a different illusion. You have an illusion which is now considered to be good, whereas before you had one which was considered to be bad. And if you accept the good illusion as reality, you're going to be disappointed, because these things that become good can revert. Happiness can revert to sorrow. Wealth can revert to lack. And you will discover that what you thought was real was just sand shifting through the fingers. Even when the grace of God is functioning in your experience, that which is seen through the human mind is still never external to that mind. And this is important, because if you believe it is external to that mind, you are going to go out there and try to preserve it, as most of the world is doing, clinging to that which seems to be external but isn't. Now, God realization, illumination, Christ consciousness, spiritual vision, spiritual discernment, these are the goal. What they really do is they transform your mental images from bad ones to good ones. But they never cease to be more than mental images, or less than mental images. They remain mental images. And if your interest is to change the bad illusion to good illusion, you can do it. If your interest is to experience reality and to overcome the world of illusion, then you've got to go beyond changing the good, the bad to the good. And now we find we're at that place where we are seeking the permanent, the eternal, the I of my being, which is not subject to ups and downs, which cannot be good tomorrow, but dead 3 days later, which cannot be abundant one day and caught in a downward deflationary spiral the next week. And so we look at the various ways in which the world has interpreted God to find our spot. You know about pantheism. You know its declaration that God becomes form. And that because of pantheism and its attitude, we have spiritual trees, they believe, and spiritual flowers, and all forms are spiritual, in spite of the fact that these spiritual forms decay and corrupt and die. Joel had a little joke about that. He said, if that were true, that all these forms are spiritual, we could have automobiles that never need repairs. And we could eat our food and still have it. But we don't. Your repair bills tell you right now that you don't have spiritual automobiles. And the theist, his mistake, is in the belief that God is one substance and man is another, as contrasted to the pantheist. And so we have two substances and two existences in the theist. And the basic error there is that if you have two, then God is limited and God is not infinite. God not being the one, there is then another. So now you have another power, another substance, another existence. And you have proved through theism that God is finite. And you have lost the power of omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience. So along comes your way, the infinite way. And instead of declaring that matter is spirit, or that matter is one form of life and God is another, it does not accept that the visible world is spiritual, or that the visible world is creation. It never makes the visible world spirit, and it never makes the visible world creation. But it comes between the visible and the invisible. And it makes contact with the invisible, so that the invisible, functioning through that contact, governs the visible. It doesn't become the visible. It governs the visible. The invisible reality governs the visible unreality. This is the middle path. But the visible never becomes reality. It is simply improved, and it becomes the expression visibly of that which is grace invisible. This is but a step. This is but a step on the path to transition. Once you have found this middle path and your invisible contact is governing your visible life, by the harmony, by the peace, by the continuity of your visible life, you know that you are truly living in the invisible spirit. That's the sign. And then you're in this world, but you're not of it. You're always of the kingdom, merely appearing in this world, and you know now that you are one with the invisible. That's the purpose of this world, to show you when you are one with the invisible. Not to pretend that this world is the reality. It is but the reflected glory of your conscious oneness with the invisible. And when you have a visible, which no longer is under the government of chance, but is governed by the invisible, then you are rising from the tomb. You are following the path of a master who showed a way in which we could walk through a world of illusion, overcome it not by our mental manipulation, which would be illusion itself, but by surrendering to an invisible power, an invisible substance. And thus, as the invisible power permeates our being and governs the visible, we are welded into oneness with this invisible, and Christ is being formed in us. That's the purpose of the visible. It is the outer evidence of your inner attainment. And so the visible is very important. But remember, it is always the effect of your attainment or lack of it, of your spiritual reality or your belief in mortality. And so whether you're in pain out here or not, in lack or not, in error or not, neither way are you in reality. Neither the pain nor the lack of it. Your reality is always your consciousness of your spiritual identity. And
And as this outside picture improves, through your ability to feel rather than to think, to move more in accordance with the activity of the heart and the mind, to let rather than to direct, to move in a silent, invisible rhythm which is directed by the spirit within. As this is deepened, your relationships deepen. Your household is changing. You are looking out and you are beholding a measure of the Christ in the world around you. You have a degree of Christ perception now, and you're not looking at the changing picture of this world. You're able to look through it. You're able to see that nothing out there, good or bad, is real. That isn't the way you live your world. You don't live in the outer at all. Never. That to you is but a sign. Your world is completely in the inner. Because as you develop this inner perception, you are going to have a new pair of eyes. You're going to have a new body. You're going to have a new mind.